ready? Representative Minnis?
I have a motion to Senate Bill 523. I'd like to move that we include in the context of Senate Bill 523 that mercy killing, euthanasia as defined in the bill, would be subject to the penalties of ORS 163-115. Which is sub A.
Which is?
Murder.
Class A.
Can you repeat it, please, Counselor Wachuna?
That mercy killing, as defined in this act, is subject to the penalties of ORS 163.115. I believe it would be encompassed by sub A of the murder statutes.
Chair?
Representative Edmondson, please.
I want to ask Representative Minnis if he, is it his intent to clarify what he believes to be existing law or to somehow create a new category of murder?
Not at all. What I want to do is make it very clear, as we've defined mercy killing, that the intentional killing of an individual under the definition of mercy killing is a very serious act and would fall under the auspices of ORS 163-115 sub A, which is a greater crime than 163-125 manslaughter in the second degree, which includes in sub B the assisting of a person in committing suicide. So we're making a distinction that when we have somebody who's involved in a mercy killing, that they are committing a very, very serious crime. It's punishable as a Class A felony. So, and I'm not trying to make a greater. I think the argument could be made already. I think what I want to do is bring the argument full circle. And so we start over here. We're about three-quarters of the way around the circle. I want to bring it all the way home and say if this happens then, it is punishable.
Another point of clarification. The definition of mercy killing and euthanasia that we adopted last time was out of Black's Law Dictionary. Counsel, what would existing law state as the punishment for mercy killing and euthanasia as we defined them through Black's Law Dictionary? Would that be assisted suicide or would that be manslaughter? What would that be? Do you know?
I think it would depend.
What was your answer, please?
I think it would depend on the particular facts of the situation.
Right.
It could be charged as a couple of different ways, I suppose.
Could be.
That's right.
Could be any number of things.
That's right. Manslaughter in the second degree, if I could, would be a lesser included chargeable offense under murder, so it could be charged either way.
I mean, if Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, if one were to with the caveat that prosecutors have full discretion, the situation that comes to mind is the gentleman in Chicago who had a young child on life support, who went in and very deliberately detached his son's life support mechanisms, and subsequently the child died. That's a situation that would, I think, qualify as a mercy killing as defined by Blacks. They also chose not to prosecute in that case, but that's one set of facts.
It's interesting, he's been rearrested several times for subsequent criminal charges, too, so.
That's one set of facts. I think one could easily come up with a different set of facts that would not make it quite so deliberate or where it could be assisted suicide. So, I mean, I think you can run the whole gamut of possible fact situations that would put you in the parameters from manslaughter to murder.
Since the bill, there's nothing in the bill condones or authorizes mercy killing or euthanasia, as the bill itself stated when it came to us from the Senate, and all we've done is to define mercy killing and euthanasia, it seems appropriate to me that we also be clear about what the penalties for mercy killing and euthanasia are. I asked the question about how it would currently be charged. I don't have a strong feeling about whether it should be manslaughter, because I recognize the discretion there, but I don't have problem saying we're going to be clear on what the penalties are. We've already said that the Act, by its terms, doesn't authorize it. Squeamishness on that, then I suppose it raises a different issue. And in light of the mailing that many of us got yesterday, I think that the issue has been raised, and we need to be clear about what public policy in this regard is going to be. I'm sorry, and I know that upsets people, but I'm not the one sending mailers saying that we ought to decriminalize mercy killing.
Further discussion? Chairman, is there a minute?
I need to amend my motion so that it reads, notwithstanding ORS 163117, mercy and killing is defined in this Act as punishable under ORS 163115, sub A.
Counselor, do you understand?
No, but I'll pick it up.
Notwithstanding ORS 163.117, mercy killing as defined in this Act is punishable under 163.115.
Further discussion? President Bryan.
Would that appear with the definition?
I think it would be a separate section. I don't think it has to be with the definition. The definition, as I understood it, would be contemplated to be in the definition section of the bill.
I suppose it could be in that section that says that nothing in this Act condones mercy killing or euthanasia.
Because what if you have a situation?
All right.
Section
14. Get
Ted. He's going to have a division of opinion. Let's just get it on the record and go on. All right. The motion's on the floor. The motion. The motion is on the floor by Representative Minnis. Is there an objection? I have an objection. Is there other objections? All right. Hearing none, except my chairs. The amendment is adopted. Do we now have a I'm here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Minnis.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 523 as amended to the full committee with a due-pass recommendation.
Representative Edmondson moves Senate Bill 523. Let me see how I'm going to say this, because I want to be sure I say this. A engrossed, as amended by this Family Justice Subcommittee, to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. I think it came to us A engrossed. Is that wrong? Did I make a mistake?
No, it came to us A engrossed.
It came to us A engrossed.
B engrossed. You're right, on the wrong bill.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. See, I did make a mistake.
Just trying to help you.
Representative Edmondson moves Senate Bill 523 be engrossed as amended by the Family Justice Subcommittee and House Judiciary Committee to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on this motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark, please.
I don't want to belabor the point, but I just, this is probably the toughest bill that we will work on this session, and regardless of how the vote comes out or the ultimate outcome of the bill, I appreciate the committee's patience in working with my concerns all the way through. I feel like it's a good bill, and it's a tight bill at this point, and I have no problem supporting it, having come in with substantial problems with the bill. So I appreciate the committee's hard work.
Okay. Would the roll call be called, please?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Edmondson?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Calhoun,
Calori?
Aye.
Bryan? Aye. Chair Courtney? Yes. Let's go on to...
Is Kelly going to carry?
No, but I'll talk to you a little bit. How about let's go to 562?
Easy.
Senate Bill 562, please.
Quirk Lane. I needed that. Your left day.
Do I have a sign-up sheet for this, or is this just, or is it, we've already heard this in the work session?
We're in the work session. We do have some amendments that were that are being requested.
Learned Counsel, would you please tell us about this bill to refresh the committee's recollection? It's been a tough afternoon. We've been on heavily involved with guns and now death with dignity. And so I think we need to have our memory jogged.
I'd be happy to. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you will find in your packets not only a fresh copy of the bill, but a copy of proposed amendments which were submitted by the governor's office and a letter that was submitted by Michael Schrunk, district attorney from Multnomah County's office. Senate Bill 562 comes to us and is a result of, I think, much work, much negotiations, and much compromise on the Senate side, and deals with the issue of primarily with the issue of pre-adjudication detention of juveniles. What it does is completely revises the current statutes and allows the courts to hold juveniles prior to hearings on their petitions or prior to hearings when certain criteria are met. What else can I tell you? Council had some questions regarding the language in the current bill. It was discussed with the representative from the governor's office, and they can present their amendments. But basically, just as you're reading this bill, Section 1 of the bill is all new language, which will be added to the juvenile code. It's all new. All the criteria for basically pre-adjudication detention and detention for probation violations. Or pre-adjudication on a probation violation. And we lost our quorum. I'm going to get a quorum.
Yes. Corey?
There goes the governorship.
You're going to explain, if I understand correctly, from Learned Counsel, these amendments. One
right.
Second, please, till we get our quorum here, but I understand that's what we're going to do.
Mr. Chair, I might just add that there is a hand-engrossed version of the bill, which we gave to council and should have been distributed.
Hand-engrossed.
Anything else here?
Oh, yes. Indeed.
The one that has Gore's office on top.
There's a Hannah Gross one, huh? Does everybody have it?
G O R. Who is that?
What? It
wasn't in the bag.
I got these proposed ones, and I got a.
Well, how did?
I got one that's got some.
It wasn't in the package,
the
you say?
Then
how come?
That's
how did
it.
He,
that's what. Oh, I see. This is.
These are set.
It's typed here at the bottom. You see this, Mr. Chairman? Yeah. The bigger letters at the bottom that don't look like.
I got it.
Well. Okay.
Anybody coming?
They're as fast as they can.
What are they doing?
I don't know, Mr. Chair.
All right, let's tell us about the amendments, and we'll get the others to trust us. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Corey Streisinger from the governor's office. Council had raised several points at which she believed the engrossed version of the bill could use some clarification. We discussed the issues, and we agree that the clarifying language is appropriate. These are not substantive changes. I'd like to run through them. There is a one-page set of amendments and a hand-engrossed version also. The first pair of amendments both relate to the same issue. It's on page 1 of the A engrossed bill, lines 22 and lines 26. On line 22, substituting the word authorized for the word designated, this is merely to conform the language to where it's used elsewhere in the bill. What this is about is the bulk of the bill deals with the standards that a court will apply in making an adjudication decision, and the language starting on line 22 provides that an intake worker uses the same standards. The intake worker is referred to in this bill as the authorized representative or the person authorized by a court. that you will see on the Second Amendment, which appears it would be on line 26 of the A. Engrossed bill, or in the middle of the typed portion at the bottom of page 1 of the Hand Engrossed, insertion of the words "or its authorized representative," again to just confirm that the intake worker would use the same standards as the court. The next amendment is on page 2, line 20 of the A. Engrossed version. And just to clean up the language on lines 20 and 21 to make clear that the issues which are to be considered in making a detention decision apply to the initial detention decision as well as any decisions to continue detention. So the word "continued" is deleted. The cross-reference to subsections 2 and 3, and then again the insertion of the words "authorized representative." The next amendment is on lines 31 and 32, again to just make the language more clear, to make clear that the court can consider any facts relevant to either the likelihood that the child will appear in court or the likelihood that the child will comply with the law and with other conditions of release. And that parallels the two substantive issues up top of page 2, lines 1 through 4, that the two grounds for detention are a reason to believe that the child will not appear in court or a reason to believe that the child will endanger the community or him or herself. The final change is on line 38, and again, that's just an insertion of the words "or its authorized representative," again, to make clear that the intake worker applies the same standards. I should, one other comment on line 38, the issue there has to do with statement of reasons for a detention decision in writing. The court obviously has to state its decisions when it makes a detention decision, and this change would require the intake worker to also make a written statement of reasons. And that is it for the amendments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Learned Counsel.
Yes, boss?
No, I'm thanking the other learned counsel. Oh. Do we have questions or comments or concerns about these amendments that are being offered at this time?
Gotta look at it.
Well, 562, Senate Bill, A. Engrossed. A. Engrossed. Representative Bryan, please.
Are we in work session?
We surely are.
I would move the proposed amendments as outlined by Ms. Streisinger and as hand engrossed in the A. Engrossed version of 562.
Thank you, Representative Bryan. Representative Bryan moves these amendments that have just been described to us to as set out in the hand engrossed version of A. Engrossed Senate Bill 562. Questions, comments, discussion?
Yeah.
We have the chief maker of the amendments, representative of the governor's office. Do we have any objections to these amendments?
Yes.
What's that?
Yes, you have an objection.
You have an objection?
Yeah, I want to ask Corey, if this, does this bill put a, it allows the county courts to put limits on detention?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, as we discussed last time, the section at the end of the bill, section 7, was added at the request of, I believe, Multnomah County initially. It wasn't part of the original bill, and we don't have a position on it, but what it does is set up a procedure under which a elected Board of County Commissioners can establish a cap on the extent of its detention facilities, and I believe a representative of Multnomah County is here to talk about that if you have questions.
Chairman, I move to strike section 7 of the bill.
Chairman?
Yeah, we have an amendment. We have a motion on the floor.
Well, I'm moving to amend the bill.
Yeah, but my motion doesn't include our touch.
Oh,
section.
It doesn't?
No.
Forget that nonsense.
The technical little one-worders that...
Oh, all right. I'm over.
We're speaking to this, Corey, you understand. We're speaking to this, Representative Menace.
Yeah.
Right. Just so everybody understands, we're in the same chat. Is there objections to the amendments?
No. Now I'll make a motion.
Now Representative Menace makes a move.
Delete section 7 of the A. Engrossed, hand engrossed, Senate Bill 562 as amended.
Representative Menace is now moving to delete the entire section 7 of the A. Engrossed, hand engrossed, Senate Bill 562. Representative, who do I call? Who was yelling at me? Representative Bryan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted a moment to just finish the district attorney's letter, and also we have district attorney Penn here. I want to get a quick comment from him.
Who else here?
as to Section 7, because I know that that was the point of concern.
Can I speak to why I'm making the...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. I thought you had...
In 1985, we got into this dilemma with the downsizing of McLaren, and it's been an absolute flaming disaster ever since when we put limits. And I think it's a lame duck excuse to use politically to justify some of your actions as a county commission. And I think if the county commissions, and I'm speaking of my county in particular, has the capability to say we don't have the capacity, they're going to use it as justification to do something other than build jails. And I'm very fearful of that kind of a mentality on the part of my county commission. And I'm not going to speak for anybody else's county commission, but mine happens to be out in some other land somewhere when it comes to those issues. Starts with an M.
Yeah, this is interesting that this has come up. I was just talking to learned counsel, whose position is, what? Why doesn't it belong here?
Well, it's not that it doesn't belong here. It's just that it's a really a distinct issue than the whole issue of establishing pre-adjudication detention standards. I know it's a very big issue to the county. I understand that when the state mandates that certain children be held in the terms of responsibility over the county, that it raises a lot of issues. But it was a add-on to the bill and from the Senate side in response to some of the, I think, legitimate county concerns.
What concerns about the county?
Okay. Does anybody, before I go to one of the witnesses who's going crazy, wants to testify for some reason, Representative Galore, do you want to make any comments?
Well, I'm just interested in hearing. I think Representative Venice has a pretty good point, as a matter of fact. But I think it's probably appropriate to hear from some people first.
Well, anyway, yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and we support Section 7 of Senate Bill 562. Section 7 was added on the Senate side to deal with the problems that are potentially raised by this bill and Senate Bill 356, both of which expand the authority of the court to retain juveniles in detention for a longer period of time in existing juvenile detention facilities than they had before. And the problems that this relates to are the same problems as we have with jail overcrowding. And that is to say that one way or the other, the capacity of these facilities is going to be established. Our choice is whether we do it or the federal court does it. If the federal courts do it, they're going to do it in a very ugly and economically expensive way. So we've supported Senate Bill 356 and Senate Bill 562 as providing additional necessary tools for the juvenile court system. At least we don't oppose those things. But the problems that they raise with respect to more demands on juvenile detention facilities that may not be designed to hold juveniles for that long a period of time are that we're going to wind up in federal court getting sued by civil rights lawyers.
Question, Mr. Snyder. Mr. Snyder, I don't understand what prevents you from setting those standards right now, if you're aware of what the federal courts are mandating in terms of standards. I think I see this amendment to do one thing. It allows you to say that the state said we had to do this, so therefore we're doing it, as opposed to the fact that you can already set those standards if you want to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Menes, it's discretionary under the bill with the Board of Commissioners. The Board of Commissioners don't have to do it. The bill allows them to do it. And our view is that we don't have the authority now to do it.
But they can do it now without the benefit.
I don't think we can.
Where's the prohibition that says they can't in a home rule county?
They can't establish the capacity of the facility.
Where does it say they can't do it?
Well, the question, Mr. Chair, Representative Menes, is that the Board of County Commissioners, if it provides a detention facility, that shifts the authority, the question of how long a juvenile is going to stay there and how many juveniles are going to be put there, to the circuit court. If a county has the facility and the circuit court places more juveniles in the facility than the facility can hold, or for a longer period of time than the facility is capable of withstanding, then that's the kind of thing that draws a lawsuit. As a matter of fact, one county that's received a number of demands with respect to that very same problem is in the problem from which Representative Minnis comes.
Corey, where are you on this?
Mr. Chair, we don't oppose Section 7. We don't have a strong position on one way or the other.
No position. I was afraid of that.
Like the NRA.
That's happened to me before. what's this? I got a note. Mr. Penn, are you here to talk about this? That's fine. He's not. I had a note that you were, and if you're not, because my committee is in a work session mode, which means, you know what that means?
Frenzy.
Thank you.
Have to do a registration of handguns.
My DA, I have two DAs, is giving me the sign that he's not into this. Okay. Representative Bryan.
But, Mr. Chairman,
okay.
Referring to the Schrunk letter, his objection specifically is this section. I think we're talking about the same thing you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's my letter, Representative Bryan, Pat Callahan from the DA's office in Portland. Representative Minnis has raised objections to page 6, section 7 of the bill.
Section 7. Right.
Our objection that is raised in our letter is on page 2 of the bill. It is section 1, subsection 7.
All right. Thank you. Is anybody else out in the hall? Because this is... All right, where's the committee stand on this? Is it going to... you made the motion, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, is there any objection to the motion? Mr. Bryan objects?
It's on the section 7, page 6.
Yeah.
Right.
I object, but I think that doesn't matter. There's still, as long as there's four votes, the majority here. All right. There's two objections, and it passed.
The deletion.
Deletion. 6-7. 6-7.
The objection being noted.
Yeah, I noted my objection, so did Representative Bryan, and it passed. So 7 comes out. All right. Is there further to do in this bill? Representative Bryan moves. Senate Bill 562.
Mr. Chair.
Uh-oh.
Now we have subsection 7 of
section 1. I'm sorry, you're right. Please forgive me.
Mr. Chair, could I make a technical comment on the previous motion? And that is that if section 7 comes out, section 6 kind of needs to
be helped
come out too, since we put section 7 in.
Here we go.
So move.
That's all it does. Added 7.
Okay, let's do this, though. There's also some other things that Representative Bryan, you had some, there's some other technicality things we're going to do here.
No, I just wanted the district attorney's comments considered. There's a motion to, I think, delete section 6, which is only referencing section 6.
Representative Minnis now moves to delete section, the line 9, page 7, A and Gross, Senate Bill 562. Right? Representative Minnis, is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is accurate.
I assume that there will be two objections to that, Representative Bryan, Representative Courtney, right?
I have no objection to removing 6.
Since 7 is gone?
Section that isn't present.
Well, then I'll be the only objection, simply because I want to be consistent. It doesn't matter, it's gone. All right, chair's doing well today. Hasn't won one yet. No, this, what about, yeah, see, we're confused. I don't know, they picked that up. We've been working from this. You left the room, and we've been working from this document. Right, Corey?
Section 7 and a subsection 7, that's what's confusing.
Is there anything further now on this bill? Then let's get to it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Pat Callahan, the senior deputy in charge of juvenile in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and I wrote a letter which I provided to the committee last Friday when I thought this bill was coming up for work session. It was delayed until today. My concerns are as stated in the letter, and that is that subsection 7 on page 2 of the A engrossed version of the bill, lines 41 through...
No, hold it. Are we dealing with the Hand and Gross version? I don't have to confuse you. I'm just saying we got to use one. Is that the one you're working from?
I think it's the same, yes.
It is the same.
The reference is the same, Mr. Chair, for that section.
Thank you. Go ahead, please.
Our concern is, as raised in the letter, and if I may summarize, as I have done in prior testimony to this subcommittee, it's our position that the subsection is unnecessary. I have laid out in my letter to this committee, to Mr. Chair and to the members of the committee, a couple of instances where the existence of such a subsection could have worked an injustice where a child, because of the juvenile, because of the acts that he or she is accused of being committed, might have to be released, and that would have been a serious threat to the community safety. Our position is that the concern raised by subsection 7 is already addressed by uniform trial court rule. And as I indicated in my letter, that should this committee think that some legislative maximum period is appropriate, I would urge the committee to adopt the language of the uniform trial court rule, which allows for the extraordinary case where children need to be detained beyond the 56-day period that this subsection allows as the maximum limit.
All right. Let's go. Committee, what do you think?
Move to delete sub 7 of 1, page 2, lines 41 to 44.
Will be closed, but I'd be glad to talk to the person on my staff who deals with this federal law, and I'd appreciate having a
I guess
more
files.
Yeah, right now.
All right. Moving on. Is there anything else in the bill now? We'll hold it. I'm going to vote on it this afternoon, but that will do that. Let's go to
Mr. Chair.
Well, I don't want to do a function of records until Kelly gets in here, because he was the one that made the great motion that drove everybody nuts. I want to go to a little certain record-keeping bill, 770. And Representative Minnis, we're going to 770. This is the bill. What? This is the bill that you want to decimate. This is Jim Hill's bill, the bill that has the world in it. Now, folks, it's time to make a decision. He's even come back and personally appeared to us before this bill. I have been told. I don't know what the story is, but it's. Jim said, listen, let's get on with it. Now, what I've been told is Jim said basically if you carry guns, you got a law enforcement or gun. I forget what it says, two phrases.
Sounds like if you carried long rifles and didn't have thumbs.
Does anybody remember 770?
Yeah.
Well, I'm listening. The minister doesn't get in here. Well,
we got.
You want a
table now?
No, don't be doing that.
Perhaps counsel could elucidate us and enlighten us as to whether we've...
Well, the objections I heard is you think there's too much in the bill. Now, if you don't think so, let's move the bill.
Do we have any, have we adopted any amendments to this bill?
No. Nope. We haven't, have we?
No. There have been two sets proposed. We haven't done a thing to it except
didn't the IRS come in with something they wanted?
Yes, and actually they've amended what they've wanted, but the IRS wants in and the Department of Revenue wants to change their language.
Well, I want to leave it alone and move it. I don't want to add anybody. Anything you might do on.
You entertaining a motion, Mr. Chair?
Well, let's take a look
at
it.
Because there's rustling in Eastern Oregon.
You got, as used in this section, eligible employee means, you got the State Board of Parole. Anybody object to that one? Hello?
What?
Does anybody object to the State Board of Parole?
They don't do all that good of a job.
No, really. No, okay. Any problem with the parole board?
Well,
any problem with the employees at Children's Services Division? Now, this is the one classified as Assistant Director for Children's Services. What is by the classified by the assistant? All right. So the Assistant Director for CSD says, is the one who decides who gets protected under the bill here. Anybody want to object to that one? Representative Miller is having trouble with that one. I have a feeling Minnis is having trouble with that one, but he's going to have more trouble if he doesn't get back in this room. He's going to have trouble with me. All right, Representative Miller, you don't like that one?
No.
Does anybody else not like that one? Well, I got news for you. You're alone now, fella.
It's all right. I'll argue on the
floor. Well, wait a minute. Department of Revenue is already in there. What's their problem?
No, they want new language.
What do you mean they want new language?
Because they're not actually investigators. They have submitted an amendment which says employees of the Department of Revenue who audit income tax returns or collect amounts owed to the state of Oregon.
Does anybody want to put them in there?
I don't. They're in there now. The question.
Right, now, what about that group?
I didn't know everything about them. I should exclude them.
Well, let me just note something for the committee. All line 1 are investigators. Line 22 are investigators. Line 24 and 25 are investigators. There's a whole, I think there's 3 or 4 groups of state investigative employees that are on this list.
That's fine.
Okay.
We're not doing that.
Okay.
Now, Steve, anytime if we hit a real nerve, you better scream, although it may not make much difference to this group, just so you know. I mean, you got to know that because we're going to go ballistic here in a minute. All right. I'm asking about Department of Revenue. Forget about investigators, employees. Do you think the Department of Revenue's people, whatever you want to call them, belong in the bill or not? Evanson?
No.
No. Representative Evanson moves that we delete line 1, page 2, A. Engross, Senate Bill 770.
That's anybody revenue, is that right?
Well,
is this the auditor?
Yeah, that's the area that covers.
I withdraw the motion.
You withdraw the motion?
Yeah.
Is it?
Should be.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I mean, I just comment.
Well, Representative Bryan.
Well, Mike. This thing is growing.
No, it's not growing. At this time, it is definitely not getting bigger.
I might have some other motions.
So we haven't added to the bill.
This is how we got it.
This is how we got it. The bill has not grown a single syllable as of now.
Maybe we
start in the Senate.
Right? Isn't that right? Am I right?
So far, yeah.
No, we haven't added any categories. We have simply, I'm going to make, for the purpose of discussion.
Were you trying to make me delete things out of the bill?
Maybe I'm not trying to get you to do anything except to bring closure on the bill, and rather than speak generally about it, I need to get focused.
Well, here then, let's just focus on the May 30, 1989 Department of Revenue prepared by Bruce Loudon amendment that says on page 2 of the A. Engross bill, line 1, delete, quote, investigators employed by, end quote, and insert, quote, employees of, end quote, and before the period, insert, quote, who audit income tax returns or collect amounts owed to the state of Oregon, end quote, period, actually be period, end quote. So moved.
Representative Evanson, so moves. Is there objection to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Yes.
I object. Representative Bryan objects. Representative Cloy objects.
No, I'm for it.
Representative Cloy. Representative Miller?
I object.
I object. It fails.
Chairman.
Representative Bryan.
Let me just comment. As I read this, it's getting more broad. Or it has become, from its original idea, much more broad, and it's starting to list all kinds of public employees. I don't know where you would stop. I mean, why not the claims processor at AFS? They're going to make enemies. Why
but
not
safe
the workers,
investigators?
Why not the workers' comp referees? They're going to make enemies.
Now those guys.
And why not legislators? They're going to make. Well, we already have made enemies. I missed. Now we're going on to OLCC and. Department
so folks,
of Agriculture?
Well, Mr.
Folks,
Chair,
what I'm trying to do is, rather than speak generally all over the place, we go down the categories, yay or nay, and then if you have anything to add after that, fine, then we go.
Mr. Jones?
If you want to use some other approach, come on, you Representative Flory.
Well, I appreciate what you're trying to do. I guess we need some kind of principle to guide us here. And I'm not sure we've settled on anything yet. It doesn't seem to be sufficient to me whether individual members happen to like certain departments is not probably a real good criteria. So I think we need a criteria. And I don't know what we've settled on.
It's the best one we
I know.
Whoever comes forward and asks.
Well, then in that case, then we've got two. You know, I mean, we've got the one that we just rejected, which was asked by the Department of Revenue, and I think they were at least trying to be helpful by limiting down to certain types of people. It seems to me that if we're going to do that, then including Oregon employees of the Internal Revenue Service, which is very parallel to revenue, and again, only certain people. You know, that's.
Representative Bryan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. As a criteria, it seems like the bill, its original language and even its original amendment, probably would be trying to protect people whose lives might be threatened because of their jobs. That's the threshold, the entry point. And now it's
a motor vehicle?
Then it gets into, I guess we then broaden the circle to those who might be harassed because of their jobs.
Toll
and
masters.
And now it's,
anybody who'd like to be in the bill?
No. It started off with police officers.
But the revenue folks are already in the bill. and they're trying to narrow it.
Yeah.
It's not really.
Where are they?
Mr. Clare, Representative Edmondson.
Yeah, but they're in the bill as the amendments. I'm saying, no, as we've received it, I don't care for it. It's already too broad.
Well, this is the Senate amendments, Tom.
I know. I'm saying I'm not liking the bill, I guess, is probably what I'm saying.
You don't like the bill.
Well, it's gotten too so broad that I, unless
you
we delete
like the,
things
You don't like
it.
What the Senate did to it.
That's correct.
Oh.
I think it's gotten so broad as we receive it before we do anything, that unless we delete it, that's just one vote.
Well, we can count.
Betty, how come I have this strange feeling about this bill?
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question? Maybe Steve could answer. I think the Senator's original intent might be what? To add parole officers. Director of Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bryan, let me give you as briefly as I can, it should be very brief, the genesis of this bill as it came to Senator Hill. The original requesters were the caseworkers at CSD, okay? Immediately following were parole and probation officers. It made sense to Senator Hill that if you had parole and probation officers, which it does make sense, then those who deal directly with inmates are also in a vulnerable position. Subsequent to that, we received a call from local corrections officers for the county that said, these guys pop out, they see our license plates, you have a natural adversarial relationship. Senator Hill decided that what the people who needed protection were those who operate as investigators for the state of Oregon. That's where revenue, brand inspectors, lottery inspectors, those individuals came from. Subsequent to the introduction of the measure, the 911 operators came in and said they're mistaken for police officers regularly as they leave police stations where a lot of 911 operations are. They requested an amendment to the bill. The Senate Transportation Committee accepted the amendment, sent the bill to the Senate floor. That's the genesis of the measure.
Brian, I wish you hadn't asked the question. We could go on for days. You know the worms?
Well, that's
can of worms.
I think that
he opens it, she opens it, it's going to put the worms
point,
back. How did the, I got to hear this one. Police standards, training and standards, employee, how did they get in there? I'm not trying to embarrass you, Steve, but how did that one get in? I am very familiar with that, being an employee of Western Oregon State College where the police academy is. How did they get in there? I got to ask you that. You don't know.
I wish I had a better answer than your question, Mr. Chair. I have to say, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that there are a core of employees that we feel much more strongly about than others.
Well, I do too.
Mr. Chair.
And we're not getting real close to that core right now, and I'm losing my patience because everybody is saying the same things, that this bill is too broad the way it is now, but there's merits to what the bill wants to do. Now, why don't we just get on to each one of these categories and vote up or down? Yes, Representative Edmondson.
Well, I just took, for the witness, I took a note that when Senator Hill was here, he said that his criteria was people who, one, carry guns,
right,
and number two, contact dangerous people.
Right.
That sort of was the filter for that everybody had to pass through. And it looked to me like some of these categories, and I think you're agreeing, or at least you're not disagreeing with me, some of these categories might not meet those criteria.
That's all afternoon. And then
911 officers operators don't carry guns, for example. And I'm just guessing that record specialists in complex record keeping do not contact dangerous people. Or carry guns, probably. Now, you know, maybe, and revenue officers and those sorts of people do contact dangerous people, at least people who don't pay taxes, and that's dangerous in our society. And maybe they do carry guns. I don't know.
All right. Can we go back?
That's the test, that's fine.
A brilliant test, and I like the test, and Representative Bryan spoke to that test a little bit earlier. That he mentioned dangerous people or something. What did you say, Representative Bryan? You said
whose lives might be threatened.
Oh, that was another nice one. Yeah. Can we go back and let me spoon-feed this? I hate to do this, but I don't know how else as chair to deal with this thing. Go back to the individual categories and vote them up or down and be done with it.
Okay.
Based on, at this stage of the game, whatever individual criteria you want to use, and if you've got the votes, you win. I mean,
we got five members of this committee, which is a bare quorum.
I know. I understand that. But time's going on, and I can't account for Calhoun. I never can. And Representative Minnis is out in the hall doing whatever. He put the sign down, table sign down. And Representative Clark, he's got guns and death with dignity, did his job on him. So it's time. Revenue. I'm not sympathetic with revenue.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion. Did you want it by motion?
Yes, no. Go ahead, please.
I would, just for starters, in terms of the first pass, going down the bill, starting on page 1, line 26, I'd move to delete line 27.
Just 1 second. 26, 27.
Right, and on page 2.
Let's take these separately.
Yeah, take them one at a time.
You don't mean 27. Line 27?
Page 1.
It's all the same line.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on page 2. You got me.
Okay, this has been requested at one at a time. I'd respect that.
You want 26 and 27 out? Mm-hmm. All right. That one I wouldn't.
Look at it as a B.
Help me again. What else did you do?
He's just going to take them one at a time.
Oh, well, that's a very good idea.
He's taking over the chairmanship.
That's very good to do it that way.
Thank you. It's an idea.
Maybe you could consider doing it that way.
26 and 27. Is there objections to eliminating line 26 and 27, page 1?
Oh, I object.
You're going to object?
That's what I just said. Well, listen, if he's got 3 votes on the subcommittee, and he doesn't have my vote for CSD caseworkers.
Let's just do thumbs up, thumbs down on each of these and go.
You better be sure. Check it. We guess check the rules.
Mr. Chairman.
A majority of the committee present to make him to amend.
Go ahead.
A majority of the full subcommittee to pass the bill out.
Keeping you awake?
Nope.
This happens in civil all the time.
Yeah, I think he's right. A majority of those present to amend and a majority of the...
All right.
Pass it out.
No objects to 26 and 27 being deleted. Representative Evanson does. And Representative Miller does.
So now
if there's
okay.
One more objection, it doesn't come out.
And I think I do. Comes out. No, it stays.
No, it stays.
Who wants to try another amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
That's a damage to the fact they brought the thing. All right. Who else?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Floyd. I move. We delete. Go ahead, Representative.
No.
His turn.
I think this is an ideal candidate for an interim. It is. We're behaving irresponsible. We need some kind of criteria. We don't have it. I went and asked the Department of Motor Vehicles how would they like it if we just turned over to them and had them...
We talked about that.
Yes, and just let individual agencies make application to them and let them maintain the list. And guess what they said? They had no interest in doing that because they don't have any criteria. We don't have any criteria either. We need to set this thing aside. Do a little work on it, come back next time, and take a more rational approach.
Representative Bryan?
Representative Clark used the proper term in his last sentence, a rational approach. Pragmatically, I think we were just told that all 5 of us would have to support this to move this bill today. Mm-hmm. And I would not intend to support the bill.
You would what?
I'm not intending to support the bill.
Representative Miller's got, it's not coming back, guys.
The table move?
No, don't be tabling the motion. I mean motion, don't table, make a motion.
With the relating clause, you can't even directly study. Mm-hmm.
Miller wants to send it to Ways and Means?
I'm willing to continue going down the line, but...
It's not getting better.
Randy, it's never stopped surprising me.
Move on to the next bill.
I just want to clarify, I'm willing to keep going down the line, but I don't think enough of these things are going to come out. Satisfy me. I was just trying to save the chair some time.
I wish Kelly Clark was here because this expunction of records thing, we brought it back. He made the motion. The governor's office people are here.
I will go find him.
He's going because...
They may be ready on 5.
I know.
They may be ready on what?
The 9.
I don't understand what's wrong with revenue. They were limiting it.
That's what they were doing.
We didn't get rid of. We weren't going to get rid of the rest of the baggage. You could tell them CSDs.
Well, I agree.
Caseworkers are. They're
really
doing
rascal.
Yeah, they get a. Well, the point is, that you want. These are people, remember the criteria, Kerrigan. position going to go on the ground report as well? Okay, I'll hand the show.
We're on this committee.
We are. What do you think of revenueers?
What the heck do you do?
Well, we're trying to smooth all these people over.
I'm going to send these seven bills.
What are we going to do? Here's the expungement.
Let's do that. I'm
Kelly's not here.
Yeah. Kelly doesn't.
We're tired.
Yeah, we're going to be taking lots of serious
stuff.
Can we have 5 minutes, Mr. Chair? Thank you.
I love a little recess.
Did you find Kelly?
Mr. Chair?
No, it's not because I'm here.
Mr. Vice Chairman, are we back.
He's back.
I don't know.
Are we rescinding the
well, that means
you know
nothing.
Doing?
You know that.
Expunction? Are you ready?
The fact that it's on the top of the list is meaningless. You know that.
Sorry to wake you up.
Package from the right life community. Ticking. She's pretty upset.
Who?
This is not
well, why aren't we going to do it?
We got to hear it today.
We've already heard it once. Oh, I know.
Are we going to hear now? What are we doing?
Okay, what are we doing? Let's,
404.
Well, is Corey, does she have an answer on the other one?
Yes, but I believe Representative Minnis is getting persuaded
on
different
right.
issues.
On
404. 404? What's this bill?
Where's Clark?
She's upset they want to see something.
Well, Clark testified once. I don't know what he's...
What is it? What do you want to do with the bill?
This one or
yeah,
this one?
Build this one.
I don't know.
How's it set up here?
Function of records. You didn't like what we did.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. Corey Streisinger from Governor Goldschmidt's office. The we support House Senate Bill 404 in the version that it came over from the Senate. The proposal made in subcommittee a couple of weeks ago was to repeal the adult expunction statute entirely, and the governor's office opposes that idea for three reasons. The first one is this is an issue which, in our view anyway, is not a problem, as in if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We have heard a lot from Oregonians over the past few years about the problems that they see in the criminal justice system. We've received hundreds and thousands of letters on that subject. We don't hear about problems caused by the expunction system. That's not to say there aren't any, but this is not a statute that has appeared to us to be a matter of either great public concern or indeed great public problem.
Mr. Chair, I want to ask you a question, Corey, because I think that there may be actually some merit to Representative Clark's amendment. It came up today with our gun control bill where we're talking about background checks. If we have expunged these sorts of criminal records, would those then not be available for us when we're doing those sorts of checks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edmondson, I believe that's correct.
So if the goal in that particular bill is to make sure that dangerous types of people who've committed dangerous crimes, violent crimes, are not going to get their hands on firearms, the expunction statute frustrates that purpose.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edmondson, I think the question is, does the fact of expunction indicate that we as a society have adjudged this person not to be significantly more dangerous than someone who hasn't committed the offense? Now, Mr. Penn, I believe, is going to propose an amendment which would give the judge discretion to determine whether expunction is appropriate or not. But that is, I believe, the inquiry is it appropriate to treat someone who's committed a criminal offense to tag that on them forever, no matter what their personal circumstances are, which brings me to the second point that I'd like to raise.
The first point first,
okay. Representative Robertson and Mr. Zier.
No, I think that's right, because I just want, I'm anxious to hear what Mr. Penn has to propose.
Wait a minute, you want to hear from Representative Penn?
Well, no, I asked my question. I think the point is that the bill, as I understand it, and, deals only with sex offenses, and there are violent crimes that do go to the violent nature of someone, and just because they sat in the can long enough to serve their sentence doesn't mean that they don't have a history of violence, and we're going to give them an AK-47 or something. I just assume not do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edmondson, I should point out that expunction is limited to misdemeanors and Class C felonies, not major felonies. and has some exclusions in addition.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, well, I just say I want to hear it, Mr. Chair.
Is there Corey?
Corey, I guess I'm not really an awful lot in sympathy with your point number one, and I guess I'd just like to ask you, how many letters does it take? Because I bet you we can arrange that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flory, it's quite possible that you could. I do have two other points, though, if you didn't like number one.
Just kind of wanted to do that. I mean, I wanted to make a little point there because,
no,
you know,
Mr. Chair, Representative Flory,
Sunday paper, Little Parade magazine, and you can make sure that you get plenty, I think. So you haven't scored an awful lot so far.
Mr. Chair, Representative Flory.
Oh, go ahead. You want to talk to us about that?
I'm not saying that the number of letters we get determines the position by any means. However, I do find it significant that on many criminal justice system issues, they clearly are creating problems for people. That is, the parole release system, the temporary leave system, and so on. We hear about those routinely because they're affecting people's lives. And generally, if there is an issue which has a significant effect on people's lives, we do hear about it.
Representative Clark?
Corey, you mentioned a minute ago that you can only expunge misdemeanors and Class A felonies? Class C felonies, I'm sorry. Why do you suppose that is? What policy does that represent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I assume the policy is that people who have committed Class B and Class A felonies are significantly different from those who have committed minor crimes, and in fact, it is much more important for us as a society to retain the ability to discover that criminal record.
Okay, but there is somebody once upon a time made a policy determination that certain offenses against society were going to follow you around all your life, no matter what your personal circumstances, no matter if you were under duress, no matter if you were raised in a bad environment, no matter what your personal circumstances, no matter if you were poor, no matter what your personal circumstances, certain offenses were going to follow you around for the rest of your life.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, that's true except for the gubernatorial pardon power, which was what I was going to mention next.
Why don't you go to your next 2 points? I have a feeling about this bill, but would you go to your next 2 points, please? Family justice is about to act like family justice. I'm sure you know what that means, Guy, but I want to hear this.
Mr. Chair, the next point is that one of the governor's powers is that of granting pardons, and we do receive a fair number of pardon applications. They are not frequently granted, but they are on occasion granted. I believe he's granted about a dozen over the course of the past 2 or 3 years. Routinely, when an application for pardon is received, that when the individual is eligible for expunction, we refer them to that process instead. The type of pardons that have any chance of all of getting favorable consideration from the governor are ones where it was a single offense a long time ago, frequently 10 or 12 years ago, that indicated often a youthful mistake of judgment that did result in the violation of the criminal laws, where there's been a significant change in the individual's lifestyle, and where the criminal record is having a significant effect on the individual's ability to conduct their life. That is, it's preventing them from getting a certain kind of job, it's preventing them from getting a professional license in a certain area. And in those cases, I can remember one pardon that he granted, and the number is very small, but this was someone who, as a college student, when undergoing a lot of family trauma, had been persuaded by a somewhat undesirable boyfriend to drive a car when he did a minor burglary. And it was on her record, and she'd served her probation, and she'd finished school, and she'd gone through teaching college and wanted to get a license as a teacher about 10 years later, and she couldn't get a teaching certificate with that criminal record. And the governor granted her a pardon.
Is that by law that you can't get a certificate if you have that on your record, or is that by the people that review the records?
Mr. Chair, I don't recall in that situation
like
whether it was an absolute bar or not.
I think the bar, in terms of being able to practice being admitted to the bar, isn't a complete prohibition, is it, if you have a criminal record, or is it?
Mr. Chair, there's a difference between crimes involving moral turpitude and those that don't, but I believe it's not a complete prohibition in any event.
Okay.
The point that I want to make, though, is that we have seen cases where there's no purpose, no societal purpose to be served by keeping a criminal record intact, and a great deal of purpose to be served by cleansing that record. And in those cases, it seems it certainly would not appeal to us to have the gubernatorial pardon power be the only option available for people with fairly minor or misdemeanor-type offenses. The court is likely to be more familiar with the circumstances of the individual case and can do a better job of making those determinations. The third point I'd like to make very briefly is that the repeal of the expungement statute would, we believe, have a disproportionate impact on minority groups. And like it or not, in our society, frequently law enforcement does have a disparate impact on members of racial and ethnic minorities in the sense that middle-class white young people are more likely to not have charges prosecuted against them. And it's an unfortunate reflection on our society, but it's true that many young racial minorities do end up with a minor criminal record that later in life does hold them back and that there is, in fact, no reason to retain.
Representative Minnis, please.
What are you basing that comment on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, I'm not basing it on statistical evidence at all. I am basing it, however, on anecdotal evidence that we hear. And I do not mean in any way, shape, or form to imply discriminatory enforcement on the part of the police, but if a court or a district attorney is making a prosecutorial decision, sometimes that does tend to be tend to have a disparate impact.
You know, it reminds me of a young black man that I arrested in Albina one time when I was sitting at like 7th and Alberta, and he said, "You arrested me because I'm black." And I told him, excuse me just a minute, but if you look at the rest of the community, it's about 95% black, and you happen to have committed a crime. My experience as a police officer is totally contrary to what you just testified to. And that's why I ask you whether you have some empirical information that states your proposition so that we can understand it from a scientifically derived point of view.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, I do not. Our affirmative action officer said that the interest groups that she works with do feel strongly on that, and I believe a couple of them may be here today. They have expressed some interest in coming.
Feel strongly versus know strongly.
As I say, Representative Minnis, it's not an area on which I have statistical evidence, but we are told by groups that do follow the area that it is an issue on which they at least have strong beliefs, and I need to leave it up to them whether those beliefs are backed up by statistics or simply anecdotal evidence.